Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to this talk. But before I begin, can everyone turn their phones off or put it on silent mode? Okay, it's not often that we have a Tibetan monk up on this podium. I'm sure many of you have been surprised that we're hosting this type of speaker, and the theme of discussion is also not our usual repertoire of talks at the club. But the professionals committee is well aware of how stressed out some of our members are, particularly journalist members. So this comes as a bit of an anti-stress event with a little bit of meditation on the side. Besides being a Buddhist monk, our speaker today has a diverse background that includes academic and also a health practitioner, having acquired his medical degree at the University of Southern California. Dr. Barry Curzon was also formerly an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Washington. He's in town as a visiting professor at HKU. He'll also go to Oxford and Stanford to give his talk. The most fascinating aspect, personally for me anyway, of Barry is that when he was living at Dharamsala for 22 years, he was part of a group of medical advisors to the Dalai Lama in regards to Western medicine. As founder and chairman of the Human Values Institute in Japan and the nonprofit Altruism in Medicine Institute, he travels around the world to give talks. In fact, he travels 7 to 8 months a year to give talks on Buddhism, on his research. He's done plenty of research on meditation, happiness, and compassion to relieve stress. Some extra interesting facts about Barry. He did a 3-year meditation retreat. His brain has been studied by neuroscientists at Princeton University and other reputed academic institutions. You could say he's a happiness expert. Hopefully, everyone can leave here a little happier with a more positive outlook after this talk. Just before we welcome our guest speaker, there will be a 5 to 8 minute meditation after the talk. I've been advised by Barry that make sure you don't drink alcohol just before the meditation because it dulls the mind. Anyway, please, everyone, give a welcome to Dr. Barry Curzon.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. I like also being in diverse places, different kinds of people, because I'm very interdisciplinary. My life has always been that way, so I'm very comfortable in this kind of an environment. I was planning for about an hour talk, and I was just told that it's going to be 20 minutes. So I'm sorry if I speak a little fast. I'll cut some stuff out, and some slides I may just kind of go right through. But, you know, since I'm associated with HKU, you might be expecting some slides. So I put a few slides together. This is the first one. So I'm going to talk about physics today, okay? I'm a Tibetan Buddhist monk, and I'm a medical doctor, but I'm going to talk about physics. Okay, because it's kind of fun, okay? And we don't have fun very much, so let's have fun. Let's talk about physics. And, you know, the undercurrent here is that the quantum physics approach to understanding the micro-reality is very apropos to understanding our minds, our hearts, and, in fact, all reality. So that's the point. David Bohm was a very close friend of the Dalai Lama. David Bohm was not religious, to my knowledge, was not a Buddhist, physicist. He said, there's no objective reality. Okay? Nobody fell off their chair, I'm surprised. Usually one or two people fall off their chair. What do you mean, no objective reality? You mean my chair's not solid, I'm gonna fall right through? Or my body's not solid, I'm gonna fly up to the roof? Yeah. So these questions begin to develop with the statement, there's no objective reality. Okay? But he did say, it's not nothing, rather, only events and processes. So everything in relationship, everything changing. No solid, independent things like we normally see ourself, our ego, and the world. Okay? Often we're not aware of that, but take it from me, we do. Okay? Okay, move on. So this is a Buddhist understanding of reality, that there are two truths, conventional and ultimate. And notice ultimate means no objective reality. When we look deeper into the nature of anything, ourself, our ego, our body, our mind, the chair we're sitting on, the table in front of us, when we look deeper, we actually can't find anything, okay? Now, I'm dancing between quantum physics and Buddhist philosophy. From the view of quantum physics, everything's made up of molecules which are made up of atoms. Atoms are 99.999999999999% empty space. There's nothing there. Okay? You have a few protons and neutrons, and then you have some electrons whirling around. It's all empty space. Why don't we fall through the chair? Okay. Then there's a conventional reality, which are, just as David Bohm said, he's a physicist, right? Events and processes. Now, when we go deeper into investigating reality, particularly ourself, of who we are, okay, what we find is when we kind of come out of that meditation and we sort of look at ourself, not in the mirror, I mean kind of, you know, reflect, contemplate on ourself, we see ourself as kind of like a dream, like an illusion, actually true, okay? That actually happens for people that spend a lot of time meditating. Okay. So there are these two truths. Conventional truth, in a very simple way, it's everything we normally relate to, see, hear, think about, okay? Just our normal reality. But the Buddha said that there's a deeper truth. David Bohm and Albert Einstein et al. Have said there's also a deeper truth. Okay, very similar, not exactly the same, very similar. The Buddha said everything is like an image in a dream. So you wake up and you've had a dream of a good friend and you feel very happy. You wake up and you still can feel, almost see that dear friend and you feel the joy. And then as you wake up, it dissipates, it goes, and you say, oh, it was only a dream. Okay? The Buddha said when you wake up to the reality, it's like that. Everything that you used to see, you recognize that is false. Okay? Just like an image in a dream. Let's see if I can do this. Oh, yeah, I like that. This is animation on PowerPoint slides. I'm starting to have to do this and getting, it's a lot of fun, actually. You can do all sorts of things. Okay. The Buddha also said everything's like water in a mirage. Okay. I'm going to go a little more quickly here because of time. But I want to do this. Cool. I like that. Okay. And also a reflection of a face in the mirror. We take that reflection to be our face, you know? We look at the mirror and we start, you know, what do you call it? Primping? Is that the word? Primping? You know, you put your makeup on, you comb your hair, and you do all your stuff, you know, and you check. And you go this way, a little bit this way, you check in the mirror. Does it look good? Does it not look good? Change that. Change the hair a little bit, change the makeup a little bit, right? As if that's actually our face we're looking at in the mirror. It's not. It's a reflection. We forget that. Okay? So this is Buddhist wisdom. If it doesn't sink in, don't worry. It's tough stuff. It takes a while. Like a reflection. Okay, I like that. Okay. The Buddha taught these two analogies to explain reality. Now, on the slide, it doesn't say reality. It says emptiness. Emptiness just means reality. Reality. Okay, good. Doesn't mean nothing. Very important. These analogies help us to realize the illusory nature, just like I mentioned, you know, when you wake up from a dream. Okay? Same kind of feeling. When you wake up from ignorance. Things appear one way, but they actually exist in another way. This could be in a textbook on quantum physics, okay? It's also a textbook on Buddhist philosophy. So mind the gap. Mind the gap. Didn't get it. Okay, sorry. What's the gap? Between appearance and reality. So normally we take everything that appears to us, our mind, our what we see, hear, what we think, we take it as real. Okay, there's a real objective referent out there. Okay? I'm thinking about the screen. Well, I just make the assumption there's a real solid screen there, okay? But when we mind the gap, we start to look more deeply at our appearances in our mind, and we begin to recognize that, in fact, that's not reality. It's something created or made up or a kind of, projected by our mind, our concepts. Make any sense to anybody? A few of you, yeah, good, wonderful. Yeah, good. That's kind of getting towards the Buddhist wisdom, and that's just what David Bohm was talking about, and Albert Einstein, and Schrodinger, and Heidinger, etc. Okay? So Raja Ramana was a great Indian nuclear physicist, sometimes called the father of nuclear energy, the nuclear field in India. Okay? And he informed the Dalai Lama some years back that the concept of no objective reality, okay, existed in India 2,000 years ago. He had read Nagarjuna, which was like the second Buddha who lived 2,000 years ago, and he knew from that book, okay, that the principles were very similar to modern quantum physics. Albert Einstein's general and special theories of relativity paint a similar picture of relativity and dependence, just opposite to this idea that we normally buy into, we may not be aware of it, of something objective, solid, existing. Einstein's theory of relativity says there's no absolute frame of reference. You know, everyone went to high school, you studied this in your, science class, maybe physics class, okay? No absolute frame of reference, unless you're as old as me, or maybe actually older, because Einstein did this in 1905 about. So you have to be pretty old to be Newtonian, right, before Einstein. So we all studied this in high school, okay? Every time you measure an object's speed, it's always dependent on its frame of reference. So the speed will vary depending on the speed the measurer is going, okay? Everything's very relative, relative and dependent. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, same thing. Measuring a small particle's mass, you cannot precisely measure its speed at the same time. You cannot. Entanglement theory says that everything is related, everything, even at the opposite ends of the universe. Einstein said, I shouldn't say that word. Einstein said, baloney, okay? Einstein actually said, Spunkhaft Verwirr Kung, sorry for the Germans here, sorry, which means spooky action at a distance. Einstein didn't agree initially with entanglement theory. Later on, he said, there's no way out, I must agree, okay? Famous double slit experiment. You have two slits and you propel photons, okay, light. You propel photons through these slits and then behind it you have a screen. And if you don't look at the screen, okay, what you get are two discrete lines, okay? So the photon's acting like a particle, small, but a particle. If you observe, you look at the screen, you get a whole random pattern, and you get kind of a wave-like function. So there, when you start to measure, okay, reality, or in this case, the photon's light, it becomes like a wave, not a particle, okay? When you observe them, they act like the photons, light, act like waves, okay? Very relative. So this relative world of quantum physics, very similar to the relative world of Buddhist emptiness or understanding of reality, okay? Now, let's turn to the world of mind and meditation, okay? I was asked to speak also a little bit about mind. The mind is like a parachute. Works best when it's open. Okay, so a closed mind actually destroys our peace and happiness. Okay, what causes a closed mind? It's all the selfish me stuff. Closes our mind, closes our heart. Okay, so it's very important for us to open our mind, open our hearts. Think about others' welfare, concern for others. Extremely important. Okay, it's also a two-way street. It makes us happy. Okay. So if you really want to be a me person, help others. Think about others' welfare. because it helps you also, makes you happy. You all know that. Last time you were kind, you smiled to someone without obvious strings. You know, you want something in return, okay? But you smiled, you know? Or you said hello and you were available, you listened, okay? Or you gave something material. You felt wonderful. I think you felt wonderful, okay? So this is the way actually to find happiness is through others, okay? Even if it's somewhat selfish at first, because I want to be happy, I'm going to help others, it's okay. The Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says it's okay. Okay, it's a stepping stone, but it's okay. Consciousness is actually a continuum. Everything is a continuum, everything. Mind and matter, okay? And what a continuum here means is a series of momentary events, okay? Events and processes. Remember David Boehm? Events and processes. Everything is in a continuum, even our mind, okay? Now, Eastern cultures often believe in a series of lives. What we're talking about is a mental continuum. Okay, that's it. Changing moment to moment. The body is temporary, right? We live 80 years, we live 100 years, we live 3 years, or we die in utero. Okay, what continues is the mind, the subtle aspects of the mind, in a continuum. Like, so moments of mind strung together like on a, you know, a rosary or a mala, like beads on a string, okay? Time magazine, I'm sorry for the competitors, but imagine there's some Time folks here. Anybody know Tim McGurk? Dear friend of mine. He was the Time bureau chief in Delhi, I think in Hong Kong, Middle East for a while. He's now retired. Wonderful man, friend of mine. This is Time magazine from a year ago, February 3rd, 2014. The Mindful Revolution. That's pretty strong words on the cover of Time magazine. Okay, revolution. What's it all about? The fine words say something like stressed out, I forget.
Stressed out multitasking.
Yeah, stressed out multitasking society. So this stuff is taking off like wildfire where many of you come from, okay, in Western countries, okay? And it's hitting Hong Kong, and in a year or two, it's gonna be wildfire here. Because people need it. They're so stressed out multitasking. So shifting our focus away from me, I, iPhone, to we, okay, re-identifying even a little bit as we, not just this body, okay, even to the whole human family, and I include animals, okay? We have that choice. We can expand our identity to include, be more inclusive of others, even all others, okay? This comes from Buddhism, comes from many other religions, comes from many humanistic traditions. So this is not religious, it's not, you know, this is humanistic stuff. You know, to be happy and to have a more healthy society, okay? Begin to identify others as part of ourself. And first we do it, it's just kind of words. It's dry, it's boring, yeah? But the more you start to think that way, it starts to have some meaning. And you gain some meaning in your lives. Something very, very important to have meaning in your life, okay? So last few words, if I may. Meditation, what is it? Okay, basically it's familiarizing our mind with wholesome, good stuff, okay? Familiarizing, doing it again and again. It helps us bring stability, the opposite of multitasking or distraction, and clarity, which means utter pristine clarity to our minds. No more clutter. We all have tons of clutter. Okay, so we can make much better decisions. That's why the corporate world is going to mindfulness, going to meditation, because they know they can make better decisions when their minds are more open, free, clear. It helps our mind and the object become one, like water pouring into water. You get absorbed, like when you listen or play music, okay? No separation. Two types, concentration, we call that shamatha. You can do that on the breath, which we're gonna do in just a couple minutes. If you're Buddhist, you can imagine the Buddha inside or outside of you, or on the mind, more tricky, but that's done. And then the second type, vipassana, analytic. You pick a topic like compassion or this Buddhist wisdom. emptiness of reality like we talked about a few minutes ago, okay? Think about it. And when you get an aha, you know, or a feeling, then you flip, you go back to the first type of meditation. You stay right on it. You focus on it. When you lose that feeling or that understanding, you go back to refresh with the analytic stuff. Think about it. Again, when you get a little bit of a taste, a little understanding, you just stay there. You go back to the first meditation. So you alternate. Sorry for talking so fast. Yoga, okay, other things, either body movement or breath movement, the asanas, positions, or the pranayama, the breath meditation. Okay, so did I do that in 20 minutes? Close, wow. And I didn't look at my watch. That might be as a result of many years of meditation, but I don't know. Anyway, we have time to meditate. Can I go into that now? Super. So let me explain what we're going to do, and then let's do it, okay? If you've already had wine, don't worry about it, because it might dull you a little bit, but the other thing it'll do is it'll relax you. So relaxation is very important for meditation. In fact, we like to balance what's called alertness and relaxation. If you're too relaxed, you fall asleep, okay? If you're too alert, your mind's jumping around, okay? So we try to balance being alert and being relaxed. We're going to do that breath meditation, the concentration or shamatha meditation together. So please sit up straight. Relax your shoulders. Let your shoulders kind of, you know, relax your body a bit, but keep your back straight. I'd like to do this with our eyes open. And what I'd like you to do, with your heads up, glance down. Look at me, please. Like this. Eyes open, glancing down. Okay? Eyes open, glancing down. Okay, great. Great. Okay. And we're going to close our mouth, and we're going to breathe just normally, naturally. Please don't force your breathing. Let it go natural as best you can. And focus your mind at the base of the nose, right here where I'm pointing, right at the base of the nose. Just, you know, concentrate there, okay? Where I would have a mustache if I did, but I don't, okay? Right at the base of your nose, concentrate. Now, you're going to get distracted most likely. You know, a thought will come up, your food, what are you doing next, what time is it, I've got an important appointment, etc. When you do that, you know, recognize you're distracted and just come right back to the breath. Okay? You may have to do that again, again, and again. That's training the mind. That's meditation. So I will meditate with you. And I'll let you know when it's about 5 minutes when we stop. Okay? I'll sit down and we'll all meditate together. Please meditate. Please stop your meditation. It was amazingly quiet in here. Amazing. I guess you were all asleep, huh? It was really nice. It was a good kind of feeling, so-called energy, right? Very, very nice. Now, I'm sure that in some of you inside, there was turbulence, emotional turbulence, stuff percolating up. Sometimes very sleepy, kind of quiet, fighting sleep. So that's all okay. Sometimes when we meditate, we're more quiet than usual. Things come up, things that normally we keep at bay. You know, we don't allow emotional stuff. So if it does come up, you know, just leave it, kind of observe it, watch it, try not to get entangled, okay? Some people come up to me after they first meditate and they say, you know, I was doing great in my life, and then I meditated with you, and now I felt like I went crazy, right? And I say, congratulations. You're not crazy. Just some stuff that's in there, it's starting to percolate up. It's okay. Let it come up if you can, and let it kind of purify. Let it kind of work its way out. I mean, if it's too painful, sometimes get some kind of psychological help, of course. But, this is good stuff. It's not bad stuff. So I think we have time for some question and answers, please.
Thank you. If we have any questions from the floor, if you do, please identify yourself. Do we have any hands? We've got hands there.
Yes, please.
So my name is Michael Hazen. I don't know how else to identify myself. In the beginning, you talked about no objective reality. And when I think about that, the idea of The Matrix comes in, which is a popular movie, and breaking free from conventional programming in the sense that when we're born into this world, a lot of science tells us that there are perceived limits. When I drop this, it's going to fall. So no objective reality, is this the idea that through going deeper within consciousness and discovering no objective reality, you in a sense become more free from the perceived limits of science, live a bit more unbound, sort of in a state of miraculous events, such as the fact that we're even living on this earth?
Yes. I think so. What binds us are our concepts. We have all kinds of concepts and judgments about so much, about ourselves, about others, about the world. And I mean, in some ways, this stuff is very useful because it helps us with creativity, inspiration, etc. But in another way, it binds us, okay? And so when we do go deeper into the nature of our mind through meditation, the process is continually of letting go. Mm-hmm. Letting go of preconceived ideas, letting go of judgments, letting go of everything, basically. Sometimes that's very frightening. Okay, and you experience that sometimes as fear. I have, years ago. But it's also eventually very liberating, very free. And what happens is, some people think you become like a vegetable, no feelings. Actually, that's not what happens. It's no destructive feelings or emotions. The anger, the jealousy, the pride, all this stuff quiets down and eventually is gone. Eventually, it's gone. And what comes in is the natural mind. And what's the natural mind? Love and compassion. So you're filled with love and compassion. Okay. You look at the great ones. Look at Mother Teresa. Filled with so much power and strength and love and compassion. Look at Mahatma Gandhi. Same thing. Look at His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. Same thing. These people don't have anger, or rarely. They don't have jealousy. They don't have pride. They're filled with love and compassion. And the incredible power behind that. Sometimes we think it's weakness, like a limp Hokkaido eggplant. I go to Japan a lot, and I love Hokkaido, right? That it just lays there, doesn't do anything. Opposite. It fights injustice because it's incredibly courageous, this heart, mind of compassion. Thank you very much. I did see Matrix, wonderful movie.
Any more questions from the floor?
And I'd like to say, where is Michael Hazen? Rhetorical question.
No question?
Hi, I'm Stefan. I'm an associate member. Could you tell us briefly about your process to become a monk from being a Western doctor or medical doctor?
Yeah, I don't know. I followed my heart. You know, I'm a person, one of those people that follows their heart. Not only my heart, you know, I use my intellect and my experience, but I value the direction my heart, you know, kind of shows me to go. So that's, I think, been an important element. It doesn't matter so much what other people think. Now, I don't like to hurt other people, particularly my parents or close people, but, you know, I do have a different, I've always been going in different directions from other people, you know, often. You know, when I was 15, a couple Zen Buddhist books came to me. I don't know how. They moved me deeply, didn't understand. 17, 18, when I entered college, university at 17, I was going to all the spiritual talks that were happening, you know, the masters from India and other places that I could go hear. And I had some incredible experiences. One of the Swami Satchidananda's, big guy dressed in white, long white hair, long beard, was giving a talk in the auditorium at UCLA. And I had the experience that someone dimmed the lights such that slowly the auditorium became black, dark. And at the same time, someone put a spotlight on Swamiji. And he became this glowing light. And I felt this incredible bliss. And I had no idea what was going on. But, you know, when you have little experiences like that, you want to check it out further, right? So there were things like that that happened. And I think that got me kind of going in the direction of a spiritual life. And, you know, I used to think I wear two hats. I no longer think that. I don't wear any hats. It all blends, you know, being a medical doctor, and I still practice medicine. I've been doing charitable medical work for 26 years. Okay, treating people that are often poor, not always, but often poor, and sometimes giving them or paying for their medications if they're poor. And being a monk, a Buddhist monk, the two worlds are very, very, you know, compatible, and they fit very nicely for me in my life. Thank you.
Do you have any more questions? We have a lady at the far left.
Hi, I'm Hilda. I do understand there is quite a difference between the concept of empathy in the West and compassion in Buddhism. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, great question. Very practical, wonderful. You know, years ago, we used to think empathy was a great thing. We no longer think it's a great thing, okay? It is a stepping stone, so I don't want to, you know, denigrate it too much. But it often can be a cause for burnout. Okay, particularly in the health professions, the caring professions, because we feel like the other person's feeling. And often in the health field, other people are not feeling well. That's why they come to us. They're having mental problems, physical problems, both. Okay, so we kind of take on their pain, if you will, and yet we're not ready to do that. So we own it. Okay, and then it becomes too much and people burn out. So empathy is I believe, a stepping stone. It's beginning to, you know, open our heart to others, and that's wonderful, but we have to be a little careful. We don't want to get burnt out. We don't want to too early take on others' pain and own it, because then it's too much for us. So the next step, if you will, is compassion, okay? So we don't own others' pain, but we recognize it. So as His Holiness the Dalai Lama sometimes says, that compassion, that love is tinged with pain or suffering. You're feeling it, but it doesn't overwhelm you. It's just a little bit, okay? Primarily, it engages you to do something if you can to help. Often, we can't help. So skillful means is a very important part of all this. What can I do that will be successful, okay, to help the other person? And often, we don't know, and then we desist. We don't do anything, okay? We wish we could, and we train, and we educate, so that next time we'll have the skillful means. But if we have the skillful means, you go ahead and you act and you help. Okay? So there is a difference between empathy and compassion. I think empathy is more of a stepping stone. Then when we get into compassion, when we get into compassion, there's many levels. Okay? So, you know, at first we're compassionate to somebody else or we love somebody else, but we want them to love us back. You know, it's like you kiss your spouse or your partner and you say, "I love you, dear." And what you really mean is, love me back, okay? Strings, not bad, but just a bit limited. And slowly, as we, you know, go higher levels, if you will, or deeper levels of compassion, less strings. We don't need a thank you. We don't need a smile, or we don't need a gift in return. But we do it just because we know the other person's hurting. Full stop. In India, we say full stop. You say period here, you say full stop. Because I think it came from the British. So maybe you say full stop? Good, yeah. India is also has British influence. Okay. Full stop. Just because they're hurting, that's why you help. It doesn't matter their reaction to you. That's more unconditional compassion. We're working in that direction, but it takes a while. Okay. So those are different stepping stones. And I think empathy is an early stepping stone. Thank you.
Any more questions? I think we have room for one more. Oh, yes, I see.
Hello, my name is Jess. In learning early on in meditation and awareness or mindfulness, it helps to have guidance, or I find it helps to be guided through it, because otherwise my mind goes everywhere. Mm. And there are lots of places in Hong Kong that offer courses or training, but it's expensive.
Yeah,
it kind
yeah.
of seems to counteract what you're trying to do.
I agree.
What do you recommend, having been in Hong Kong, I guess, for a little bit? Where do you start, where would you start if you were someone starting, you know, the process?
Yeah. I don't know, come to some of my classes. You're welcome. You can sit in, you don't have to pay anything. I don't know. You know, when you look for a teacher, okay, it's always important to check the teacher out first before you make any kind of personal commitments, I mean, in your heart to the teacher. And it's good to see that they're pretty pure, okay? Good motivation. So they're not doing it for money, you know, or not much. Maybe they get their expenses or a little money. That's okay, but they're not trying to get rich from it, okay? They're not trying to rip you off monetarily. Second, they're not going for power or fame. You know, I want to be the very best teacher or whatever. You know, that's not really their main interest, okay? Obviously, things that are taking advantage or even abusing, you know, sexual issues, you know, make sure all that's clean, best you can. And then you kind of go with the teacher and try it. Be practical. If it takes too much of your money, it's not worthwhile, then, you know, go somewhere else. You know, it's new here, and I'm not that familiar with a lot of the groups, so a little hard for me to say. There are a few groups that I think are very authentic, because I know their teachers are very authentic. But if I start saying names, then it's kind of implies that others aren't, and I don't know enough to really do that, so I want to be a little careful there, if you don't mind. But just check it out. You're obviously a very professional, bright woman, so you have the means to check that, to see, do some research, okay, before you make some decisions. Now, the first part of your question is, my mind's all over the place. You can't have these big expectations that you go to any group or any teacher, and boom, your mind's going to settle. It doesn't work that way. Okay, if you're meditating 5 minutes a day, so please meditate every day. All of you that are interested, meditate every day. It's very important to develop the habit. Anybody forget to brush their teeth today? Raise your hand. Probably embarrassing, you wouldn't raise your hand. But I don't think anybody, yeah? Or unless you were in such a rush. Right? But we don't forget to brush our teeth because it's a habit. Get your meditation the same way. 5 minutes. You know, wake up, go into the toilet, brush your teeth, you know, wash your face, okay, freshen up, and then go sit 5 minutes, 10 minutes, every day in the morning, okay? It's really, really healthy for your mind and your body, both, okay? So I'd recommend that strongly, anyone that's interested. Now, if we spend 23 hours and 55 minutes a day stressed out or mind jumping around, it's very unrealistic to think that we sit down and for 5 minutes, our mind's gonna settle. It isn't gonna happen. Okay? So we have to work on our other part of our life, too, to try to reduce some of the stress. That's very important. Exercise, you know, cutting back even 5-10% sometimes. These things are important. We don't have to be super women, super men all the time, okay? These things are important. There's a breathing exercise, which we've run out of time, so maybe those that are interested afterwards, I'll show it to you, a 9-round breathing that really helps to settle you quite quickly. So if you're interested, we can do a little quick thing after, you know, when we formally finish here. I'm good until about 2:30, then I have another appointment I have to go.
All right, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Barry Curzon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for having me. From what I understand, I'm the first monk that's, you know, had the great honor and privilege to be in front of you. I don't know if that's true from the old days, but nevertheless, I feel tremendous gratitude to the organizers, the people that invited me, and all of you, the members and the guests that have come to listen today. So thank you very much.